Hey, everybody. Delighted to have back a regular guest who always drops real value. And that is Lynette Zhang of Lynette Zhang Enterprises and also found on lynettezhang.com. And we are on the morning of some pretty breaking news. So we want to jump straight on it. And I think it's kind of interesting. We're seeing contagion as more subprime automotive lenders. We, of course, had the car parts businesses and a lot else. And there seems to be a lot of damage being taken in cars at the moment. Who better to have on a day like this than Lynette? First of all, Lynette, delighted to have you back. How are you doing?
I'm very happy to be here, Francis. Thank you so much for having me back. Lots of things are going on.
Indeed. In fact, given that intro, could this be a spark for debt-related contagion that could start to see the banks come into the frame and further aspects? We're seeing credit card delinquencies. Where are we standing on this, and how should we be viewing this news of the moment?
Well, really, what Wall Street wants you to think, I can't even tell you how many times I'm listening on Bloomberg and they're going, oh, this is just an anomaly. This is just a one-off. Oh. No, I think it is the canary in the coal mine. And really, I think what makes this particular move with the defaults in automotive so significant is that it's not just the lower end consumer that's having problems paying their car loans or their credit card bills or their mortgages or any other debt, certainly the student loan debt. These defaults are really coming from every single sector, even those that are making like $250,000 a year. They're still having trouble paying their loans. And when you stop and think about the fact that a lot of these loans have been turned into financial products and sold to people for their retirement plans or in mutual funds, ETFs, et cetera, then you can start to see the problem with the contagion, not just through the banking system, though certainly through the banking system. And we have to keep in mind, too, that depending upon when those loans were taken out, we had 15 years of zero interest rate policy. All of that debt, if this is interest rates and these are market values, right, with the interest rates where they are, they're all underwater. So if there is indeed a bank run, which is what they're trying to do in every way, shape, and form to avoid, then it becomes apparent the deep problems that are really in the debt markets.
That's a great response. And of course, you're highlighting that a lot of that debt, and I want to hammer that one aspect, particularly home, was taken out on much lower interest rates environments of the last 5-6 years, for which an immense amount has been baked in. There's only really been one cut so far, and it's going to hurt real bad. Should we be expecting a more larger banker contagion run out of this? At some point, it feels like it has to happen. How does that manifest? And on top of that, let me bolt a truck and a trailer onto that question. Are we truly really in a form of recession that just hasn't been acknowledged, given the weakness of the consumer and the rates? How do you respond to that, Lynette?
Francis, I think you're spot on. You know, I mean, the government gets to determine what is a recession and what isn't a recession. But when you see people having to put their weekly food bill on 4 easy payments, and then you see the CEO of what is that online platform where you can donate money for people?
I got another name.
Right. The CEO of GoFundMe say that the biggest growing area is the area where people are asking for help with their day-to-day expenses, their energy expenses, their car payments, their mortgage payments. I mean, what does that tell you about the consumer?
Yeah, no, they're crushed. And I feel, the labor stats lie. I think this goes back a lot further personally. It's not a popular view, but that right back to the Democrats under Yellen, when we actually met the criteria of a recession. And of course, they said, well, you can't have a recession on the red hot labor market that we've since renounced as reliable statistics. The non-farm payrolls have been greatly discredited, multiple revisions upon revisions, monthly revisions and annual revisions. How far back do we really have to go to understand how long potentially we've got this? And I call it stagflationary type vibe, where it's the main street is deeply recessional. And at the same time, the cost of living because of the debasement of the dollar and other fiat currencies too, it must be said, is stubbornly high. How far back would you take it? As much as when we met the criteria, was that the beginning of a recession? Maybe we bounced in and out a little.
I would take us back to 2007, 2008, to the financial crisis. And I feel, that in my opinion, and I have felt it since then, became an urban farmer because of it. But there's not one little doubt in my mind that the system as we knew it died in 2008. And what we're seeing right now, which is so fascinating, is that those people that were coming of age during the financial crisis are now more in a position of influence and power. And so what we're seeing is a rise in, well, I'm going to say socialism alternatives, because we've been lied to about what democracy really is, to be honest with you. But people are hurting and they are looking for the answers and they are looking for what they can do. And unfortunately, it's good that they're seeking. They should be. Everybody should be seeking to know what the truth is right now. But that's the key. Going to another political forum and a platform that the new socialists are standing on is rent control. That's not the battle. Just like back in 2008, what Occupy Wall Street, that was a huge global movement. I didn't have a strong enough voice at that time on the internet, but they didn't know what they were fighting for, and they still don't. It's not rent control. It's money valuation control. Yeah. It's getting sound money back in the system, redeemable gold, so that the public takes their power back. What are you going to do? Fix the rent and all the costs continue to go up? That makes no sense. But that's what governments do every time, because they're pointing the finger rather than looking in the mirror. It's not rent control that we need. It's money control. And it is the population needing to take the power back. So I'm hoping to reach out to some of those groups that are forming and help them see what the real issue is, so that we can all come together and get some money back in the system again.
100%. And hearing you talk about democracy and the misinterpretation of what democracy is, I couldn't help but think you could add capitalism into that mix as well, because it seems like capitalism is being tagged as the great failure, when in truth we haven't really had sound money, price discovery, and many other real aspects of capitalism. And the media managed solution to the problem means ever more bends to the left, towards eventually Marxism as a form of communistic solution. You mentioned rent controls. That's one way to ensure that landlords exit provision, and then you end with shortages. And this is literally the fall of the USSR, with queues around for bread. When you price control below the price or cost of creation, then, apart from state decree, there is insufficient supply because it's non-economic, and nobody's interested in non-economic practices. Nobody wants to sacrifice himself on account of others. Capitalism is built on self-advancement inherently, and that ideologically we are moving to ever more statist intervention. The solution to the younger generation whose minds are being manipulated appeared to always be take from those that have, as if so it's a culture of envy seems to be certainly popularized, and communism leans into that narrative. I suppose I'm ranting a little bit here, but would you agree? Would you add any further color to that? Does it sound like you're being told there's a problem and then being sold the wrong solution, which is actually part of the problem?
I couldn't agree with you more. And I consider myself a capitalist. I want to build my world on my efforts, right? If I fail, and I have, I've failed miraculously and hugely 3 times. There was nobody there to bail me out. In a true capitalist system, that's what happens. But quite honestly, Francis, this goes all the way back to 1913, 1914. So we, you know, and that's a mixture of what did governments want when they set this system up? They wanted to be able to tax the public without the public knowing so that they didn't get pushback. What did the corporations want when they set this system up? They wanted to pay the workers less and less and less, but knew that if they were used to getting 10 bucks, they would not easily accept 5. Yeah. Inflation baked into the system is how they solved that problem for both those entities. And I have the evidence on this. I'm always happy to send it to you. But in 1914, what the U.S. government did, what the central bank did, was convert corporate debt into Federal Reserve notes. And I bring that up because the same thing is happening today with stable coins. And this is huge. Most people are not aware. And, you know, I've lived through, I'm old enough. I just turned 71. So I lived through when they took the silver out of the money in the U.S. And I was in grade school then. I had no comprehension of what was happening. I was a young teenager, I think like 16, 17, 18, when they took the gold out completely out of our monetary system. So I wasn't quite old enough to understand what was really happening, but I was definitely old enough to see all the chaos surrounding this shift and to have felt the impact of those shifts at that time, as well as here we are today at the end of this currency's life cycle, because there is officially and virtually no purchasing power left. And every layer of confidence that was built into the system. So bank to bank, that was gone in 2008, as witnessed by interbank lending. Central bank to central bank, as witnessed by the Swiss surprise. And I can go into any of them in more detail if you want to. But as witnessed by the Swiss surprise in 2015, and then markets to central banks in 2022, when the central banks on a global basis broke a 45-year trend cycle of downward interest rates to continue the inflation by raising those interest rates. And so we're dealing with some of the fallout, but this all really started in 2008. And this is crony capitalism. Winners and losers have been chosen. That's not capitalism. And democracy is you have no voice. I mean, I can tell you, I don't feel like I have a voice in the political system. Now I'm going to learn how to do that coming up, to because I think it's critically important that we get gold and silver legalized on a state-by-state basis, because it gives us a stronger foundation to do it on a federal level. Yep. So I'm working on that and learning how to do that. Because we've got to fight this battle. If not me, who? If not now, when? But I say that to everybody that's watching. If not you, who? And if not now, when? Because one person can't do it alone. But there are 8.4 billion people on this planet. If we can get 3% to convert their garbage fiat money into sound money and demand redeemable gold back in the system, we can take our power back. We have that opportunity right now. I've never seen it better.
I love that statement, and I enjoyed just sitting back and listening to that. And can we say we're delighted to be giving a platform and popularizing this video that has that statement in it? And I'd like to just put two fat cokey lines under that. Support Lynette Zhang in re-establishing precious metals and precious metals coinage as real money. This is one of the most important things all Americans and other nations watching this should actively support. Right. We have to recognize also within that, and it starts at the local level. What I also like about the work that Lynette is doing is that this is starting at a state, almost municipal level and up. That's what you want. Unfortunately, there are very few, and that's one of the statements you made also in your tirade there, was that you do not have a voice. You do not feel there's anybody representing you up top. There is no Ron Pauls. Massey is not getting any real traction at the higher levels. It's unlikely to be allowed too much further. So what you do is you start at the grassroots level, a bit of a crazy old phrase, but a simple means getting local people to A, start by accumulating precious metals, gold, silver, and coinage-related precious metals, and at the same time lobbying and working where just a small but activated amount can actually affect a huge amount of change. Because everybody else is so fragmented and passive, you actually don't need as much as you think, but you need a virulent, motivated army of people demanding precious metals.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Lynette.
Well, I just want to say that it isn't, I mean, while I'm part of this, there's actually a global sound money movement that is taking place. I sit on the advisory board. And it's really a bottom up and a top down approach where we're working with legislatures at the federal level and lobbying there, as well as that grassroots effort. But it has never been more critically important everywhere and anywhere in the world that you develop local community, because during these transitions, and I think we're all seeing this now, food becomes the single biggest issue for most people, right? So we need to be as self-sufficient and independent as possible while we're building our sound money foundation. This is, what is sound money? Sound money is money that cannot be inflated away. The value cannot be inflated away by governments or central banks. Why? Why can't they inflate away the value of gold and silver? Because gold and silver are used in every single sector of the global financial and manufacturing and medical and jewelry and in every single sector of the global economy, period. Therefore, this, I never hear anybody else talking about this. It's crazy, Francis, because it's got the broadest base of functionality. They have not been able to duplicate the qualities of gold and silver in a lab. So it has the broadest base of functionality and therefore the broadest base of demand. This is not complicated. It is not rocket science. It is so simple. If you have a lot of people and a lot of entities that have to buy gold and silver for their solar panels or their air traffic or whatever they need it for the jewelry, they can't wait. And we're seeing this shift happening. There is always demand for gold and silver. That's why it's never gone to zero and why it is above all central banks and all governments.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ultimate sovereignty, isn't it, for an individual beyond governments. And I think that's why it's resented and downplayed as well, because it's a tool of freedom in a world that seeks control.
Exactly.
And that's our big problem with it. I've got two things I want to come back at you at. They were very interesting. You mentioned also in your long form response, which I love regarding sound money, was a stable coin. And there are a lot of people that are bringing in this aspect and they think it's some master stroke of 5V chess and it's suddenly going to prove this bottomless pit of consumption for the parabola of treasury issuance. I'll throw in some numbers because you may not have known this was coming up. And ironically, I was just doing this research just before we kicked off. But since its existence, USDT, the largest one known as Tether, has since 2014 till today purchased $168 billion in treasuries. And I'd like to highlight that in the last 30 days, issuance was $550 billion in a month. And I'll also point out that Tether is now looking into investing into precious metals and miners and needed a capital raise because the long end of the debt market lost 55% in value between 2020 and 2025. So there's this great cope in the crypto world and these things know, and some of the politicians that are very pro-Trump, that's this is a masterclass. It's going to be this bottomless pit for treasuries, and it's got to catch up. You don't catch a parabola is one of my favorite sayings. You can run as hard as you like, but once the snowball is halfway down the mountain to hit the village, you don't catch up to it or stop it for that matter. But anyway, maybe a lot of people are presenting this as, you know, this grand cunning plan that is going to assume all of this excessive issuance. What's your take on the positioning of this masterstroke and its viability, bearing in mind that they're actually wanting to capital raise because of the hole in their balance sheet and now are going into even discussing purchasing miners?
Well, first of all, I didn't know that about Tether as far as purchasing miners. That's good. I'm going to be looking more at that. But, you know, I think we had this conversation a while ago where I said, well, what's going to justify creating this new money? And everything that I had read had been either debt or purchases, with the institution and the legalization of stable coins. The answer is both, because the U.S. has been losing its position as the world reserve currency, with fewer and fewer entities, whether it's governments or even individuals, buying U.S. government debt at a time when they need to create an awful lot of debt. So they needed to create a new false market for our debt, artificial market, just like the petrodollar was created in the 70s to maintain that status. So that's what President Trump is attempting to do. He's a change agent. So I'm not saying this or that. He is a change agent. That's his job in here. And legalizing stable coins, the goal is to create that artificial market for dollars. And here's the thing. When he signed that, whether people realize it or not, he just changed the global monetary system that is now going to be based for a minute anyway on stable coins. And to your point, so brilliantly put, it's a never-ending ability of purchases, right? So what happens is somebody goes into Amazon or Walmart or take your pick, because any corporation can issue stable coins. Any government can also issue stable coins. And we're going to have a whole lot of fragmented stable coins that you are going to be used to create those purchases. So the interesting thing is me as an individual, if I go into Amazon and I want to use their stable coins, because after all, they're nudging. If you do this, then we'll give you that, and they'll get you in their ecosystem and make you all these promises and let it be really cheap for a minute. Well, what you're doing as the individual is you're selling dollars, you're using dollars to buy those stable coins, and then the issuer of the stable coin has to turn around and buy those treasuries. It's a mess. My personal, very strong belief in this, and obviously I could be wrong, time is going to tell, but I feel this from the tip of my head to the tip of my toes. And typically when I get these kinds of feelings, Francis, I'm never wrong. There is no doubt in my mind, but that the stable coins are the tool that will usher in the visible hyperinflation that we need to have in order to burn off or repay those debts with currencies, any country, take your pick. But in the U.S., with dollars that have less and less and less value until they have no value at all. So yeah, the stable coins for me are a huge issue being used to usher in the crisis, but they're not the solution. And really, are they much different than CBDCs? You know, I mean, here in the US, CBDC is a bad word. So, we can't say that we're going to do CBDCs. But here you have these corporations that have AI. They know how you think. They know what your habits are. It's easy for them to nudge you in the direction that they want you to go in. So I don't know. Is there a whole lot of difference between the corporate, because what's the Federal Reserve or what are central banks? They're private corporations. Are this private corporation controlling you, or these private corporations controlling you? The difference is in the fragmentation, because I'm pretty sure that those stable coins are not, that are issued by corporations anyway, not going to be interchangeable. They're going to be about keeping you in their infrastructure and controlling everything you do, having you hold through tokenization, having you hold all of your equity, all of your wealth on your phone, and then nudging you to spend it until you get a smart contract notification that you don't own your house anymore, or your car, or your portfolio, or whatever else that they've enticed you to blindly spend away, because you can't see it. These things are so hidden. Golden.
Yeah, you pivoted there very interestingly from the stable coin role that Tether is playing. And then you included tokenization, which is the even greater evil over what we've all been focusing on, the CBDC element, which is obviously going to be tracked, data accumulated, too many stakes this week, social scoring, blah, 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 yeah. But the tokenization is part and parcel of the eventual asset strip, which you reference there. And I see the two very much. It's the Trojan one that people are talking about less. Yes. Everybody's been weaponized to resent the CBDC. And that's not wrong. But it's almost the lesser evil of an even greater evil. The digital clipboard that is coming, where we will all have to register our assets. Your conveyancing on your home will have an automatic rental agreement in it, or automatic purchase agreement through an NFT proxy, which will be essentially the re-establishment of a digital derivative proxy ownership over a physical asset that can even be purchased by someone who's never, not even on the same continent as you, who's proliferated the token of choice at great cost, probably statist or corporate, and can come and just outbid, buy up, and trigger a change of ownership by taking that token off you. And there were a lot of papers, Ethereum, Vitalik Buterin, and a Chicago professor were talking about, well, you know, the biggest corporations are Airbnb and Uber. They don't own cars. They don't own houses. You know, it's super cool not to own things. You can just be a business and you can, you know, you can control things without owning them. So they were selling this thing, and this whole ownership thing, you know, it's so old school. You know, you only need a car when you want to drive. You know, most of the time it's sitting in a garage. There's all this spiel that they are constructing in these white papers that they are delivering. And it seems to me like a communistic assets grab and tokenization, I'd almost say, stands alongside at minimum and maybe even a little higher as an attack vector on us. What is your feel with regards to Larry Fink's particular, as a new, also the World Economic Forum new head, I understand, figure role, because that is where he continues to come hard. And BlackRock recently announced that they are going to go hard on developing their own tokenization structure. And he's one of the biggest mouthpieces for this enthusiastic transnationalism that will come by tokenization. Do you see it as the evil?
Well, okay. So first of all, World Economic Forum, is this the way that you own nothing? I don't think you're going to be happy, so I can never put that last part on there. But by 2030, you will own nothing. Also, I'd like you to kind of think about this for a minute, because when you look at the leverage in the system, whether it's BlackRock or it's JP Morgan or any of these banking entities or private market entities, right? What do they need to continue the collateral? They need or to continue the leverage, rather. They need more collateral. When you look at the level of leverage that is in the system, and just to be more clear, that's this itty bitty bit of equity with lots and lots and lots and lots of debt put upon it. The banks are really, I mean, there's more leverage in the system now than there was in 2008 when
Agreed.
The derivatives that imploded it. They need a broader capital base. And if they are managing, they being JP Morgan Chase or BlackRock or any of these guys, if you're holding their tokens and their tokens have turned your hard assets that at this point don't make it into their system, don't make it into their ecosystem for leverage, boy, doesn't that give them a whole lot more collateral to grow even more leverage? And remember too, these derivatives, this is hidden. Right. We see the little tippy top of this iceberg, but we don't see all the garbage that's underneath. Again, going back to 2008, from all of these underwater assets that are sitting on the balance sheets of all of these corporations, they don't talk about that, do they? So they need to recollateralize as well as make it easier to move these assets on a global basis. If I have a choice, I will never tokenize my assets. But what is likely to happen is a major crisis like we saw in 2008, where how many people have restructured or were forced to restructure their mortgages, their loans, and those new contracts, do you think they were written in the individual's best interest? No, they're this thick. Who reads them, right? So
nobody.
To shove, you're in deep trouble. And that's what this tokenization for me is about. It is about the World Economic Forum. By 2030, you will own nothing. It's about the financial system needing more collateral because they are so extremely leveraged right now. They need more equity. And hey, if they've used all the equity in the markets, they got to have the equity that is not in these markets. I will not make that choice as long as I have a choice. And hence, again, the importance of the public taking their power back. Because if we don't do it now, what do they have in mind for us? A full surveillance economy like you were talking about.
There's just nothing to disagree with in anything you said there, and it was very well stated. Let's pivot a tiny bit because I think we're conferencing very tightly there, and I think we made our message very clearly. So gold, for the first time, had around 6% of a pullback. And what was very noticeable, now you might not know this, Danette, because I think you lie low on X nowadays. It is quite a controlled algorithm, but we saw an outbreak of Bitcoin. Buy Bitcoin, it's now going to go up. Gold is now topped and it's going down, which I found rather amusing in terms of price progress. And our overall philosophy, and I'm curious what yours will be, is until we've had a major debt reset, until the silver-gold ratio has plummeted from the 80s, well below 30, probably even making a single-digit spike, and until silver and platinum are running faster than gold, you aren't even finished with the beginning stage of this precious metals. And you will know the problem and the reaction and the solution when the event occurs, much like your reference to subprime or maybe CB19, because there will be sheer drama and it'll all be financial in terms of the headlines, maybe a distracting element with it as well, like a war. But are we at the top in precious metals now, given this recent pullback, or are all these people delusional? What's your take?
Well, okay, I have a few takes on this. Number one, we've got backwardation in both silver and gold, which means that the current spot price up until the correction yesterday, because today's Wednesday, up until the correction, was technically overbought. In other words, it went too far, too fast away from its 200-day moving average. However, this is also critically the time for everybody to understand the true fundamental value of all assets and all instruments. They want you to think, Wall Street wants you to think, well, they're telling you how much something is worth. But it is a trading economy on Wall Street. And what's been happening with both physical silver and physical gold, up until this point in the U.S., it's really a paper market, and they can create as many contracts and therefore as much gold and silver that never will exist as they want to suppress the price. But what started last January, and this story ain't even marginally over yet, what started last January was all the physical metals, both silver and gold, that were being repatriated, shipped over to the U.S., and then delivered out. And that has created a short squeeze because the demand for the physical has been taking over the paper markets, hence the backwardation. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. We can't know that. So yes, technically, both gold, spot gold and silver, not the physical, but the spot gold and silver, were technically overbought, but also they remain severely undervalued. Nothing goes straight up, nothing goes straight down. You got to have the bouncings along the way. There were some gaps. I do a live every Tuesday, and I'm going to be pulling up the charts on both spot gold and spot silver and going over them quite thoroughly on purely a technical basis so you can see what I'm talking about. But what everybody really needs to understand, if this is fiat money, government debt-based money, and this is sound money that cannot be inflated away, they are both money. They're just the opposite sides of the coin. So, oh, look at the pullback in gold. Well, how much is gold really worth? Do you know? Are you trusting Wall Street with any good price discovery? Because if that's what you trust, there is this bridge in Brooklyn that I could sell you. I don't own it, but I'll sell it to you anyway because you're that gullible. No, you need to know how much something is really worth in terms of dollars. So how is this garbage created from debt? And they can create as much of it as they want because they can create as much debt as they want. But every time they do that, the value of what's already out there, the purchasing power value, which is what matters to you and me, goes down. So if you want to know how much an ounce of gold is, it's simple. I'm not going to get you to the penny, but I'm going to get you real close. How much debt has been created? The last time I checked, according to the IFF, officially, there's $313 trillion worth of debt that's been created. And I do this globally because this is a global issue, right? We are not talking about all the derivatives created from that debt. So what I'm telling you is...
all the unfunded liabilities either. That's also not included.
Exactly. So this is really, really very conservative. Well, how much gold is there? In the physical world, I don't care what it is, there's a finite amount. Even if they find more, there's a finite amount. And the Department of the Interior runs a report on an annual basis on the gold and silver that is yet in the ground. So let's take gold is indestructible, so you can take all the gold that has ever been mined, as well as all the gold that is yet in the ground to be mined, and you divide all the debt by all the gold. And that gets you somewhere in the vicinity of $40,000.
And I think when the curtain comes back and the fraud is exposed, by the way, I don't know if you heard, you probably did because you're very honest, but maybe you haven't. Cayman Islands has turned into a very interesting destination for treasuries. And apparently it's been restated that their holdings of treasuries has been grossly understated, that they're only showing 25% of what they truly hold. It's four times larger. And in fact, they've now shimmied right up. They were already quite substantial for what is a tiny speck with about a 7 billion economy. They've now rushed up the rankings even further, although they were pretty high already. As a 7 billion economy, they hold around 1.8 trillion now, mostly bought on leverage in a complex daily funding mechanism that's called the basis trade. We now find out, and to me, this is just further evidence of corruption to maintain a failing system. To others, they don't seem to see this as nefarious. So what's your take on the recent revelations? Did you hear about that? Do you need more detail, or are you up to date?
I haven't heard about that. I will be looking at it, but this is not a surprise. And in fact, I was just reading a report last week that the same thing is true with physical gold in central banks, that what they report that they've been buying or holding is substantially lower than what they're actually, what they've actually been buying and holding. And so, you know, somebody's got to buy the debt because that's what creates the money. And so it's not a surprise that there's that much debt, because what? The U.S. stopped reporting the level of new money that they put into the system. And what year was that? 2006. Because, what do we need to know that for? That's why I use the debt levels. But do I think that those debt levels are even accurate? No, I don't. So when you stop and think about it, right, we keep testing this low level of confidence. When we break through that support level of confidence, and that's public confidence in the system, I think it is game over, because I'm already seeing evidence of the beginning stages of hyperinflation as witnessed by the monetary velocity. So we're already there. We're already there. No, this is not surprising at all. What are the central banks trying to protect themselves from? But what they know that they're doing to all of the currencies. So the key really is how long can we keep this lie floating? Keep this Ponzi scheme going until it all implodes. And with the advent of the stable coins, that tells me that they think they're ready for this crisis. So when people think, oh, we got it 20 more years. Oh, Lynette, you've been talking about that forever, blah, blah, blah. You know what? These things don't happen overnight, or you notice them. So for example, if I go into your house every single night for 30 years and I take one button, by the end of 30 years, I'm going to have most of your buttons, but you're not going to notice it. If, however, I go to your house tonight and I take 97% of your buttons, every button in your house, tomorrow morning when you go to get dressed, you're going to notice. So that's what they've been doing. They try and take our buttons at a slow enough level that we don't notice it. That's that 2% target. But hey, if the public and if the normal buyers of treasuries are not buying, and this has been true for a long time, and with the two biggest buyers, Japan and China, that's been especially true since 2013. This is not new news, but do they want you and I to understand it? No. That's why they have to suppress the price of gold and silver. You see this correction? Technically, it needed to happen anyway. It was too far away. There were gaps, blah, blah, blah. However, having said that, they want you to do this. And what is this? This is a physical representation of Bitcoin. This is a physical representation of XRP, and this is a physical representation of Ethereum, right? Boy, don't they all look an awful lot like this, right? Why? Why aren't they purple? Because they want you to think that it's just like gold when it isn't like gold at all. When they want you to think that Bitcoin has value because of how much energy it uses to create it. But when it uses that energy, it uses it up. That energy is not available in storage anywhere. Whereas when it uses energy to mine gold and silver, well, gold is indestructible. So that means that you can use it over an infinite number of times, that same energy. You know, this is used everywhere. This stuff is used one place. This stuff is used one place.
And you don't get charged a toll every time you send it or give it to a friend.
Exactly.
On somebody else's railway network, a bit like Rockefeller and the oil analogy, and how he always wanted to charge you for using. Yeah, it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much. And it's so ironic. I find the whole crypto narrative, particularly for Bitcoin, that seems to be the most toxic of the maximalists there. And everything they do seems to be based off its parallel to gold that it aims to replicate in a digital way. So the whole narrative is, you know, mining. Why do they have to mine? Because it's trying to be gold. Gold is mined. Proof of work. Digging a hole in ground required energy to find and extract, and obviously a lot of geological savvy and probability analysis and a lot that goes into an exploration company, all of that. So there's some intelligence and there's some energy expenditure. So they have an algorithm solving problems that expends energy. The whole thing is literally a digitized copycat of physical gold. And then their biggest enemy is that which they most seek to replicate. It's almost like I wish to be Lynette Zhang so much that I hate her. I copy all her mannerisms, all her ploys, and wish for her to die so I can assume being her. And that is how the Bitcoin and the digital gold narratives seem to be put. And again, you have to look at who are the associates around it. You have Michael Saylor, who's running a bit of a Ponzianomics treasury function. You have Larry Fink of BlackRock and the World Economic Forum as big fans. And then you have gold. You have people like von Mises. You have Hayek. You have Ron Paul. You know, you should choose your friends carefully, shouldn't you, Lynette? And as we're coming up for our hour up, it takes, be careful who you associate with, because you become them or you get the outcomes they typically distribute to all those that are around them. And I prefer to be around sound money advocates in real physical gold than these digital proxies, which is literally another form of derivative. A derivative is... It's not the real thing. It's derived from. It's a substitute proxy. And I suggest to everybody that they follow you on your YouTube channel, on your networks at LynetteZhang.com, and that they support your initiatives for the local establishment first and then higher up of gold bullion coins, silver coins, etc. as money again. Any closing statements you'd like to make, Lynette? I've really enjoyed the chat today. And also, please explain in your own words how people can engage further with you as well.
Well, absolutely. You know, the thing that I would say is don't hesitate and don't let Wall Street dictate how you think. Their job is perception management, to manage how you think so that you move forward for their best interest. I say educate yourself. Come see me on YouTube, at the Lynette Zhang, as well as Twitter, same address, at the Lynette Zhang, Instagram and Facebook, at Lynette Zhang, and of course on our website. But we also love phone calls because we're a physical company. We have a physical location and we like to help people. And you can call us at 833-GLD-ZANG. But don't accept any substitutes for sound money. It's been around and proven for thousands and thousands of years. This gives you control, and it is time for us to take our power back locally, but also globally. We have to come together on a global basis and demand redeemable gold in the system again, because then if you don't like what you're seeing the government or the central bankers do, yeah, pull the gold out and you force fiscal responsibility. What a concept. you and I have to be fiscally responsible. Well, how about we have our government be fiscally responsible too? What a concept.
Great message. Really enjoyed today, Lynette. Thank you so much. And to everybody, please check her out and give support to people that are real advocates for sound money. And Lynette has been in that space for decades now. Until next time, I say goodbye. And Lynette, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime, Francis. Anytime at all.
Tired of profit wipeouts and blown accounts from following trade signal groups and other YouTube channels? Looking for a better way to trade, reduce your stress, and minimize your risk? Become a skilled technical analyst and see the charts and markets in a new light using the successfully proven HVF method by Francis Hunt, while being surrounded and supported by a principled, structured, and experienced community. Enjoy a constructive learning environment while practically trading markets, supported by a bespoke platform run through browser and app, specifically designed to teach and engage you whilst learning and growing as the markets move. This is not a Telegram or Slack signal group. All trade ideas are based on a proprietary technical analysis process honed over decades, which is the HVF method, leading to trade ideas with fast-moving breakouts and tight stops, exact entries and exits, nuanced interim considerations, and ultimately, strong rewards. Submissions are graded and scored by Francis for potential high-quality setups, and we provide bespoke tools to help get the job done properly and with precision. Over time and with focused effort, you'll begin to look at charts and price action just like Francis. Community updates every day by Francis and our three webinars a week provide a 360-degree approach, which are presented by our experienced team of trade leaders, to spot potential trades. We're a community of self-actualized individuals, spanning the globe and active 24/7, 365. The premium community provides a warm, supportive, and cooperative place for people willing to listen, participate, contribute, and to learn. We've changed thousands of traders' lives. Transform your approach to trading now. Transform your life. Book an introductory call with us on the link below.